Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast, shared on accessmedia.nz with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Hello, welcome to Recuperate. It's the spring fling. It's a spring fling.
It is a spring fling.
Yes, because we're in spring now. I'm Katie Abbott, and that's
Lucy Cooper. Right, we're going to speak to author.
Lucy Cooper is going to call in to Jared, and I'm going to tell you a bit about him before we talk to him.
Go on, go for it.
He is the best-selling memoirist.
Memoirist.
And now he's a science fiction author with his new book, which was launched in July as a Kindle first, or, you know, e-book, and then it's coming out in paperback, is The Last Beekeeper. It's right up your street. I've pre-ordered it.
Okay.
So I'm quite excited too.
Is it dystopian, do we know?
It is, and you know that's my favourite, one of my favourite things.
Edgy, end of the world stuff.
End of the world stuff just thrills me. So it's The Last Beekeeper, and it's a series of three books. So this one ends on a cliffhanger, and I'm sure we'll find out more about it.
Okay.
And you may know him locally because he lives in Martinborough, and he did his memoir Moon Over Martinborough, which I think I've got. I've read. Have you read it, Lucy?
I haven't read it, I'm afraid.
It's very funny.
But I do know that it was a blog first, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And some years ago now. I mean, we're getting older, but it was part of that movement of, you know, suddenly people were doing blogs and then they were becoming books, because it wasn't a thing before, was it? I don't think so.
It was published internationally in 2013, so that's
some time ago now.
And it was called An Olive Grove at the End of the World, Edge of the World, beg your pardon. So Jared's a self-described American city boy living in rural New Zealand, and he moved here with his partner CJ in 2006 to 20 acres of blissful rural delight, which he posts about all the time, and it looks lovely. He's got lots of animals, which I'm sure we'll find out about, because they've got cool names like Dougie and...
Okay. Yeah. Shall I give him a call?
Yeah, let's give him a call.
Let's do it.
I'm glad I'm not the only one who's a technical idiot.
I don't know what that was. I never called you that, just on the record.
No, you were thinking it.
Okay, let's have it.
The way you looked at me, I could tell you something.
Oh, no, I didn't. Did I? No, I'm going to call him on that number.
I'm going to call him a landline, just in case we have patchy. Patchy. I've been watching a lot of apocalyptic stuff at the moment.
You have?
Yeah.
Is that doing you any good?
Probably not, but...
Just looking after you, Katie, that's
what
I'm doing.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you. I appreciate it. Jared, hello.
Jared, be home. Hello, Jared. No. Oh, hello, Jared.
Hello,
is that Jared?
Yes.
Hello, how are you?
It's Katie and Lucy. Hello.
Welcome onto the show. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm sorry we've kept you waiting.
Yes, I'm very sorry.
No worries. My pleasure.
We have been so taken away with the whole evening. And do you know, I spoke to you many years ago, and you won't remember, and that's totally fine. I'm letting that be okay.
But I do remember, because we were actually connected on LinkedIn and everything, and it jogged my memory.
Oh, there you are.
What a diplomat.
Well done. Thank you. You can tell you're American, because you did that so beautifully. yes, that was a long time ago now, and so it's lovely to have you back on the show, and it's lovely to know that you haven't stopped writing, and in fact, you are now into science fiction. This is pretty damn cool. Tell us about that journey.
I'm having a lot of fun. I've always really enjoyed science fiction, and you know, it was just a sort of random fluke of my life that I ended up writing memoir, and because I was writing my blog about living out here in the Wairarapa, which led to my book about olive farming. But my true love has always been science fiction.
Oh.
And so I said, I'm going to write a science fiction thriller, and I wanted it to be full of suspense and have a kind of crime novel element and a little bit of horror and kind of make it a little scary.
Okay.
And so I set out to write a really suspenseful, fast-paced kind of science fiction thriller.
Oh, it sounds Good. It sounds good. Now, where are you drawing your kind of... Have you always been a science fiction buff, is my first question.
I have. Mm-hmm. Always. Ever since I was a kid, I've always read all sorts of science fiction and fantasy and what's kind of, you know, generally called speculative fiction, things that aren't real, you know?
Oh, I've never heard of that term. That.
No, nor have I. Speculative fiction.
Oh, okay. We're going to use that a lot now. That's a good term.
It's something that Margaret Atwood is the first person that I read in an interview. She referred to it as speculative fiction because she said it wasn't. She doesn't write squids in space.
Yes.
But if she did, they'd be excellent.
I'm sure they would.
Yeah. So it's. I think that's why it's more scary, because it's it could be based in truth. And perhaps happening in Texas now is sort of Margaret Atwood territory, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and that taking something that feels real or could be real or is real on a smaller scale and then blowing it out is actually, I think, why her fiction is so powerful.
Mm.
And that's really what I was doing with my new science fiction thriller, The Last Beekeeper. I was taking the kind of danger that bees are in right now and sort of expanding that out into a global bee crisis where in near future... both honeybees and wild pollinators are endangered. There's a global bee crisis, and there's giant mega corporations called bee lords who are paid a lot of money for pollination because, of course, the global food supply is at risk.
Okay.
And in the midst of this, there is a reclusive beekeeper who practices traditional beekeeping. Mm-hmm. He goes to a remote island in Lake Michigan, and I grew up in Michigan, so it's near and dear to my heart. And he goes to retreat to this island to escape the madness of the world. And the book starts where someone starts burning his beehives. He's like, why would anyone in a global bee crisis start burning my beehives?
Yeah.
And in trying to figure out what was happening, he discovers that there's something much darker and more terrible than he ever imagined.
Mm. I think I'm going to really enjoy this.
I know. I've pre-ordered my copy.
Oh, that sounds great. I mean, I know that we know that you live rurally and you're kind of fully immersed in that kind of natural world and the world of kind of food production.
Yeah.
So you were drawing, and clearly you're very knowledgeable about, you know, some of the perils facing that kind of that side of our life. Is that where you were drawing a lot of your inspiration from for this novel? How did the germ of the idea start?
My partner was keeping bees for a while, I've just always been really fascinated with bees. And also, you know, living in Martinborough is the first time that I've lived in a very small town. Mm. And I was really interested in a kind of a small town where everybody knows everyone at least knows who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also, years ago I read The Scarecrow by Ronald E. Morrison.
Oh,
and it's a fantastic New Zealand novel that really plays with this kind of murder and small town charm. And it's such a Kiwi noir kind of thing. But I loved the kind of combination of terror and the small town in that novel. And so I really liked the kind of remote location, small town, close to nature. I'm a huge nature lover. And coincidentally, the protagonist of this novel is as well. And so I just really drew on all those threads.
Mm.
And it just came out this thing that it's been getting great reviews. So I feel like I kind of figured out how to do it, which makes me really, really pleased. The best quote I've had so far is heart-pounding action that builds like a boiling kettle.
Ooh, sounds great.
Yeah.
I like the solid tea reference there.
Yeah. And on Goodreads, you're getting wonderful reviews.
Oh, that's great.
And I don't get out of bed for anything four stars.
Right.
And you're way over four stars.
Oh, this is exciting. I'm looking forward to reading this. Can I ask you about your process? Has it been relatively straightforward? I mean, clearly, you know, you're turning to a form of writing that you have a love for. But is it a straightforward process? Did you have moments where you kind of just kept ripping up the pages and starting again? What's that journey been like for you?
It's been a long journey because while I've been writing it, I've also been trying to learn how to write a sci-fi thriller.
Mm.
And, you know, the techniques that make something, make it a page-turner, the way you kind of leave small open loops that leave the reader wanting to know what happens, but then you jump away to another scene.
Yeah.
All of those elements that make something really suspenseful. I mean, I've been reading books about how to do it, to be frank. I just recently, well, while I was writing it, I read a book called How to Write Scary Scenes, and how to kind of use the senses to really invoke a sense of unknown and fear. Because there's something, the other element of the story is that there's something in the woods that's attacking people and nobody knows what it is.
Okay.
So it's been a long journey trying to figure out how to do this.
Yeah.
So, but I love learning new things.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, it's one thing to enjoy a sci-fi thriller and read them, but it's another to really, it's a craft to figure
it
out how
really
to write.
It really is.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't even know where to
start. All those threads you have to weave together at the end to give a sense of, you know, rounding off people's.
Yes, you want to
expectations
complete
and,
the journey. Mm.
Yep.
And how do you keep track of, you know, those story threads? Do you have like a massive whiteboard? I mean, how do you kind of actually do it?
I actually use recipe cards. And I write things out. I write out scenes. And I write out all the scenes that I see in my head, not necessarily in the right order.
Right.
And then I put them in the right order. I've also been reading a lot about... about kind of story structure and plot structure and how you build to a climax. And so I've been, and that's one thing when I was writing the blog that led to my olive farming memoir, which is now an international edition, is an Olive Grove at the Edge of the World. Mm. When I was writing the blog that led to that, every week I wrote a short story about living here on the lifestyle block.
Mm.
And I learned a lot about how to open with a hook, how to lead to a climax, and how to get a resolution. And I did that every week for a year.
Mm, yeah.
I learned a lot about story craft. And so that's what I apply to these recipe cards that I write out, and I try and figure out the story arc for it and take things out that aren't contributing and add things in where there's missing bits. And then I put that into an outline, and then I go from there.
Wow. And who is your kind of support crew on this? Who, how do you kind of know whether you're on the right track? Who's your biggest critic in that process? Does CJ figure in this kind of?
CJ does figure in this quite a bit. He really does. I'm always bouncing ideas off him. And in this book, I have had so many people help me. You know, I joke in the acknowledgments of this book, my most recent book, The Last Beekeeper, that if it takes a village to raise a child, it takes a secret cabal to write a book. I had about 10 beta readers, both in New Zealand and in the States. I also hired a developmental editor to help me with the story arc, a woman who works in London who has done a lot of sci-fi editing, and then I've had a copy editor as well. So I've had a lot of help, and it's at one point I was really overwhelmed, and the story felt like I couldn't pull it together. And I actually took a break because I just couldn't get my head around it.
Yeah.
And then I came back to it refreshed, and with all this really great feedback from beta readers and my editors, it's been a really kind of I've relied on a lot of people to do this.
Yeah, I don't know if this is a daft question, but, you know, writing is such a personal, and it must be quite torturous at times. Sometimes when you're receiving feedback, can that be quite difficult personally if you're kind of say you're wedded to an idea or wedded to a character? Yeah. How do you kind of, you know, dial back the, because I think I'd leap into defensive mode and go, I'm not doing that. These people don't know anything.
Yeah. Especially if you inspired the character.
Yeah. So how do you manage that personally? And have you learned a lot about, you know, yourself in this writing process?
Absolutely. And I it's not easy to manage. And there was one moment when I had from my developmental editor, she suggested some changes that I was like, absolutely not. And there's no way I'm doing that. And then I thought about it and I was like, you know what? That actually is a really good thing. And she just helped me bring out a theme that was there that I pulled it up stronger. But then there were other things that there are multiple points of view in this novel, and she at one point recommended I reduce it all to the protagonist, and I didn't, because I had been, interestingly, she's amazing, fantastic, does a lot of science fiction editing, but I was also trying to work a thriller angle, and in a lot of thrillers there's multiple points of view because you create suspense in a scene and you jump away from it to another scene,
yes,
and then you come back to it, and I really wanted that element. So it was difficult to go through and figure out, like, okay, I need to take this feedback, but this feedback is not true to my vision, so I'm not taking it.
Got it, yeah.
It's not easy. It's hard.
No, it must be very hard. And do you have a kind of a support group of other writers that you kind of share ideas with, or kind of give each other, you know, writer's block tips for?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I've got a group of writer friends, both in New Zealand and in the States, that really helped me. And, you know, years ago, before I started working on my olive farming memoir, I took the summer fiction workshop at Victoria University's Institute of Modern Letters. Mm. And out of that, we started a writing group that we called the Sittenfelds, which we named after the instructor, and who was Curtis Sittenfeld, who'd come over from the States to teach a summer course.
Right.
And so we created a great ongoing group of support for each other.
Mm.
And I've had other writing groups and writing friends that I've got some friends in Carterton here that we meet up every once in a while and share what we're working on and give each other feedback in a nice kind of informal way over you know, lunch and that kind of thing. So it's really an important part of writing for me is connecting with other people and getting other points of view.
Yes, I've heard that. And again, it must be, you know, when you're just starting out and you don't want to show anybody anything because you don't know if it's any good, but secretly think it's okay. And then, you know, but you do have to kind of get over yourself, don't you? And just take that bold step and show other people what you're doing. Otherwise, you know, it's just your own writing. It's, you
Absolutely.
Know, yeah.
Well, and you don't learn. And there's a great quote that I love that I can't, it might be Joseph Campbell, but it says, "Everything you want lies on the other side of fear."
Mm. Yes.
That's wonderful.
And it's great because you have to face that. You know, it is scary to share, especially in any creative endeavor. You share those things.
Definitely.
It's scary, right?
Yeah. But yeah, absolutely.
That's how you learn and grow.
Yeah, totally. So what next? I mean, the your beekeeper, last beekeeper?
The last beekeeper.
Does it,
yep.
Is out. And tell us what will happen next.
Well, this is the first in a series. It's called the Vespling series, and you have to read the book to know why it's called Vespling. But so there will be, I think, probably three, maybe more. We'll see how it goes. But I'm working on the second book in the series now. The storyline continues. There's a key drama between the protagonist, the last beekeeper, and his teenage daughter. And there's a strong story arc that continues beyond the first book into the second one.
Okay. And can you see beyond that? I mean, have you kind of got the whole trilogy or whatever four books would be?
I do have a high-level story arc. Like, I know what's going to happen at the end of the last book.
Yeah.
And I know key milestones along the way.
Okay.
And right now I'm just finishing up the outline for the second book. And I've been doing variations of it for a while. Like, even when I was working on book one, I had some outline ideas for the next book. So it kind of changes and morphs, you know. It's a little bit like add a little here, take it away there. And then, you know, what I ended up with The Last Beekeeper is very different than my very first idea. It grew and morphed quite a bit. And another exciting thing I'm working on now is the audiobook for The Last Beekeeper.
Oh,
are you reading it?
No, I'm not doing it. I do plan to do the audiobook of the Olive Grove at the
Edge.
Yes, you have to. Because it's a first-person account. But this, I've hired a professional narrator, and he's fantastic, and I'm listening to the final files now, and so that should be available within the next month or two.
Oh, wow.
So you got to interview people to choose? Because it's such a personal thing, because I've had audiobooks that just the person they chose grated, and I couldn't listen.
Yeah, it really is. And well, I'm not at liberty yet to say who I've got.
Of course not, no.
What happened was, when I sat down to think of who I wanted to do the audiobook, I thought, well, who do I really want? And there are some audiobooks that I've listened to from a narrator who's really, really talented. And I approached him on Twitter and said, hey, would you do my audiobook? And so anyway, I managed to get someone who's got quite a good reputation in terms of audiobook narrators.
Yeah.
And he's doing an amazing job.
Oh, my
How
God.
Exciting.
That is exciting. That must be kind of so thrilling to hear your book being read by somebody that you truly want to listen to. Like, it's almost like three-dimensional.
I have to say, it makes his, because he's a professional actor, and his reading of the book brings like a whole, you're right, three-dimensional. It's like a whole other dimension to the book. And listening through just doing the sample files and whatnot, he's got such a great way of delivering tension and suspense that when he ends a chapter, I'm like, oh, what happens next?
That's hilarious.
So I wrote it. So it's really, I can't wait for it to come out. It's really exciting.
Oh, that's great. Well, keep an eye on that. And because your website is lovely and full of really awesome information. So presumably if people went to that website, which you're going to tell us the name of, then people can find out when that audiobook is available.
Absolutely. My website is jaredgulian.com. So it's just J-A-R-E-D, Gulian, G-U-L-I-A-N. So jaredgulian.com. And if you sign up for my author newsletter, you get a free Olive Grove short story and you get the first four chapters of this new sci-fi thriller.
Okay. I'm going to sign up. That's brilliant. Oh, this is awesome. I'm so excited for you. And you live here in the Wild Upper, and that's just perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. It's so good to chat. So thank you so much for your interest in chatting about it.
Oh, it's been wonderful. Katie, and you know Katie, or Katie...
Oh, we used to work together a very long time ago.
Yes, back in professionally years and years ago.
Yeah, there you are. You've returned.
It's very nice to have a connection to both of you, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Jared. We wish you all the best. Yes. We'll watch with interest.
And we'll have you back on. When people are comfortable leaving their homes and coming into busy places, we'll get you on physically in the show.
Yeah, my copy will be here in 2 weeks.
Woo-hoo! Awesome.
Yes, well, the fingers crossed that we get past this current stuff as soon as we possibly can.
I hope so. You look after yourself. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
See you soon. Bye-bye. Bye.
Oh, it sounds so good. Isn't it the perfect blend?
Yeah.
It sounds right up our street.
I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah, I think
you
I'm going to...
borrow my copy.
Okay. Well, I think, we've spoken to him now. I better buy my own. We could get him to sign it. Bye-bye, everybody. Thank you so much.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody. Bye. See you next month.
Bye.
Recuperate.com.
Press start, but not our button.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast, shared on accessmedia.nz with the support of New Zealand On Air.